But I suppose one thing we could look at with that is that perhaps they've reached that level of technological evolution and perhaps philosophical evolution where the necessity of violence, the necessity of conflict is no longer an issue. I mean, obviously, I'm speculating, and perhaps these are now exploratory vessels of some sort, and their civilization has adapted to the point where they're looking to explore the cosmos and learn rather than develop weapons platforms and, offensive platforms. But I would agree with you that if these are beings with technologies, if we're not talking about some sort of interdimensional strangeness that we can't even fathom, if they are extraterrestrials with highly evolved technologies, then yeah, I would imagine at some point in their history, there must have been a level of conflict for that type of technology to arrive. But I like to, Dr. Stephen Greer with the whole every single one of them is peaceful. That's not something that I can accept just on a logic basis. I don't think that's an assumption that we can really make. But I would be open to the idea that, these civilizations have perhaps reached what I think we need to reach, which is a symbiosis between science and spirituality, or physics and metaphysics, and technology and consciousness, and perhaps they do represent a potential pathway that we could take, which is a more peaceful evolution through science and an underlying appreciation for the fundamentals of reality. But obviously, that's just my own personal, optimistic bias that I would like to put towards it.
It's as good as any. I mean, we really have no idea. And we know that the universe is inherently hostile. That's why they have crafts to begin with. Otherwise,
Right.
they would just kind of walk through space. So it's hostile to the development of an organism. But that hostility, that difficulty is what kind of nurtures a
Yeah.
complex intelligence into developing these technological capabilities.
Which, in a strange way makes it not necessarily hostile, but a prerequisite for development. Yeah.
Well, you need a forge, you need to fire and forge a metal to
Exactly.
harden it.
Yeah.
So, and that goes for the same for human character. Like anyone who's never had a hardship
Yeah.
is
Yeah.
generally somebody you don't want to be friends with, because it's impossible to empathize
Yeah.
with anybody if you've never had a hardship to draw from. They tend to make the worst friends, people who've never experienced any difficulty in life or adversity.
Yes, yeah. That was a brilliant presentation. My goodness, we went from BC to AD to present day. Like, you took us on a absolute chronological journey through the phenomenon. I mean, that was a fantastic presentation, Mikai.
Well, thank you. What I hope we accomplished here was to string together the accounts throughout time into one dialogue, into instead of being individualized and kind of swatting it away, we saw clear trends, statistically significant trends
Yeah.
of and patterns in referencing and description. If you're a debunker, I appreciate healthy skepticism. The problem is when skepticism becomes cynicism
Yeah.
on the simple behalf of a non-belief or something of
Yeah.
that nature. When you're looking at a trend analysis like this, but on a smaller scale with more hard facts and data points, and you come to a conclusion, like you can argue that conclusion, but at some point you're simply arguing for the sake of a belief and not the logical conclusion of the data. And what I hope we accomplished here was that we now see a pattern clearly in the data. Certain trends have existed throughout recorded history. We see a pattern of how modern day military industrial complex treats this phenomenon. We see a pattern of what they do with it. And, you know, we can extrapolate what's occurring now. I really believe in Wernher von Braun's detailed kind of narrative that he told Dr. Rosen, that this was a schedule. This was a long planned out schedule. And in that schedule, he details, like, first we'll have, you know, the threat will be X, and then it will be
like the Russian, the Chinese, and extremists.
And then it'll be extremists, which we saw. And then it will be the threat narrative of extraterrestrials. And they can use that threat narrative because it's a real phenomenon that they can draw off of. And when you can control the narrative in a manner that generates fear, people are more willing to follow whatever the military industrial complex wants to pursue, whether that's the militarization of space, which is already happening, if it hasn't already. So I think they're really piggybacking off the actual UAP phenomena itself.
I have to admit I feel if they're trying to get people to be terrified of the phenomenon, they're doing, pardon my French, a piss poor job of that, because people aren't really terrified of it. The Congress people aren't terrified of it. You know, it's being addressed as a potential national security threat. Obviously, there's, you know, the penetration into secure sites and strategic nuclear assets, and people are concerned about that. But I feel like if they wanted to, unless we're just in the middle part of a long game and we've got all of this to look forward to in the next couple of years, I just feel like if they wanted to drum up a real fear that would kind of catalyze the populations of the world to support the weaponization of space, it's not really happening through this disclosure rollout. It's not really being put on that strongly. People like Lou Elizondo are saying, well, we don't know it's a threat, but we have to look at it through this angle. I'm from the DOD. We look at things in a threat perspective. So they're kind of explaining it in a way that puts people at ease with the idea of it being considered a national security threat. So, I mean, I'm wondering what you think about this. This is something I wanted to ask you. The modern day UAP soft disclosure conversation.
Yep.
If we're going to look back on this and say we already have, which is my opinion as well, black budget, reverse engineered craft, operable platforms that use some sort of exotic propulsion, field propulsion, electrogravitic, what do you think the game plan is with this rollout of talking about the UAP issue and the way it's being addressed in a modern context?
Sure. You have to look at it in a psychological standpoint. When somebody, I touched upon this when we spoke previously, when you're waking somebody up from a deep sleep or a waking nightmare or sleepwalking, you should never just abruptly wake them up, because that would cause disruption in that person's mental health. Or their reaction will be uncalculated. That's something to consider. What I believe, when I say they, I'm referring to whether corporate or military or whoever is in control of this information and this narrative. That's who I'm determining is they. I think what they're interested in is preparing us so that we don't have an uncalculated response. The last thing they want is a response that they weren't prepared for. It's the military. This is what they do. This is exactly, you plan for A, you get ready for B, and then you have C already in the pipeline. You don't want, you know, a letter down the road that you never planned for. And that's what would happen if you just drop the ball. You don't really know how the mass would react, especially in this day and age. So you slowly you slowly feed and fold this into the modern mainstream narrative, and you kind of take the temperature of where society is heading with this information. How accepting are they? Do they feel that it's something to be afraid? I think what we're going to see in the future is a situation that gets blamed on a UAP, whether it's an accidental crash, whether it's a nuclear accident. I truly believe that something is going to get blamed on the phenomenon, and that's going to be used to kind of drum up what you're saying. Where's the fear? Well, they haven't gotten ready for the fear. You don't throw fear in immediately before you stoke the fire. If you do that, you have chaos, you have mass disruption. If you fold the narrative in, get it people ready, and then throw the fear, you're not going to have the mass hysteria, mass disruption, mass breakdown that you would if they literally said, you know, here's the whole story, this is fact, here's an alien, get on stage, here's their ship. That would cause so much chaos. No one can argue that it wouldn't. And you have people who say, well, show me the facts, show me everything. But it's not just about us as individuals. It's about us collectively.
Yeah, yeah.
And collectively, it would be absolute chaos. And I can tell you that as someone who, you know, studies the economy and follows economic and market trends, it would ruin us. It would absolutely ruin us. So they have to get ready for the fear phase. I hope I'm wrong. I hope this is all nonsense. I don't think it is. This is what I do. I connect dots. I analyze trends, and this is what I'm seeing happening.
So do you think that the people that have emerged out of the bureaucracy, out of the DIA, DOD, do you think they're a part of this? This is a problem with the UFO community is a lot of people have become quite starstruck. And although I support the efforts of people within Congress and the Senate and Lou Elizondo and Christopher Mellon, I'm also not naive about the fact that they come from these backgrounds that normally people
counterintelligence.
Yeah, I do find it a bit strange that people are very willing to let go of the fact that these people are counterintelligence professionals, because they're at the moment championing the cause support. They're supporting something we believe. So, because I do think that this is a very strategic rollout, and I don't believe that rules were bent to get the videos released. I'm also a little dubious of Lou Elizondo resigning out of anger and becoming this, you know, going to the New York Times. It feels to me like all of this has been very meticulously planned. So I guess I'm asking you if that's how you feel about these people that have emerged out of the government structure and have become leaders within the UFO movement and the UFO community. Do you think they're a part of this long plan?
I don't think you'll ever get the entire picture from any of these individuals. One, they can't tell you everything. And two, they're not going to relay all the information that they know or why they're doing things. You know, when you're creating a long-term plan like this, so if I'm advising a company and we're putting together a 10, 20, 15-year, you know, kind of trajectory plan, you don't have this notion of everything is so strategic down to the year, who's going to be this, what's going to happen this. You have a broad definition, you have a broad outline.
Right, right.
And you have these gradients on this timeline that you kind of try to enact whatever the scenario you want to enact to be strategic. But you look at, you know, 5 years from now, we'll take a look at the market. We'll take a look at development, technological development, and we're going to do this at that point. But we don't know exactly how we're going to do that then, but we'll figure it out.
So you're saying basically there's area of movability, but there's checkpoints in the road. So you can move around a little bit in this space, but we're going here next and we're going here next. And that's
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So, you know, how hard was it to have somebody in ATIP? You create a small budgeted, you know, they throw around $20 million like it's a lot of money. I mean, that's laughable. That's absolutely laughable. There's cars that are more expensive.
Yeah.
So, so you have a guy who's clearly interested in it. He's very, you know, you do a psychological profile on Lou, and he's very, he seems to be very augmented toward this heroistic sort of personality. He wants to help society by solving this riddle. And so it, to me, it's not hard to believe that somebody on the inside who actually had knowledge kind of drummed up his fire, got him riled up, and, you know, helped kind of usher him into the direction that they wanted. This isn't hard. This happens all the time in counterintelligence. And I believe that he got counterintelligenced himself. And, you know, he was already on that path and frustrated. And that's easy to see. If you're, you know, a higher up and you're a good manager, you can take the temperature of your staff and you should be able to tell where they're at headspace wise. So I really think, and then you have people like Chris Mellon, who I think he's just pissed that he wasn't on the inside. And I think you, honestly, and I think you see this a lot, like Harry Reid. He probably had accounts with other individuals who were in the know, and he wanted to be in the know because he's Harry Reid. And so damn with it, he'll figure it out. And
well, I think that's right. I mean, he applied for special access program status for ATIP and got this, denied, you know.
The men in power, like Harry Reid, Admiral Wilson, Chris Mellon, they all have an air of authority. They scoff at the idea that they don't have the ability or you know, reason to be read in on these projects. And they know they exist because they're privy to other people who probably know.
Yeah.
And they, you know, that pisses them off. And so they want to figure it out. And so I see that's how I see these things playing. It's not, I don't think Lou or Chris or Hal Putoff or Tom DeLonge or any of these people are in on the plan. I think they're all being maneuvered.
They're just cogs in a wheel.
And it sounds dystopian as hell, but that's my analysis, just based on my knowledge of how these things work and how people interact and how technology moves forward. And it just seems like there's a hidden hand that doesn't have the best interests of global citizens at hand. And maybe they do. I don't know the whole story. It could be, there's really two ways to look at the government's cover up here. One, there's three actually. One, they're benefiting from the cover up. And so if you're benefiting, you don't want to release it. Two, they don't want to look like complete imbeciles, which I don't ascribe to, because there's enough accounts out there that we have this technology. And I have had conversations with individuals in aerospace off the books and casual conversations where I've heard things that corroborate this research and this presentation. And then three, the truth might be so disturbing that they just don't want to tell us. So those are the three those are the three logical conclusions, none of which are appealing to me. I don't want to think that our government is so inept with the massive amounts of money we give them that they can't figure something like this out. I don't want to believe that they know all this stuff and are keeping it for their own benefit. And I also don't want to believe that it's so disturbing that they just don't want to share it. So what are we left with?
Your guess is as good as mine, Mikai. I mean, I don't like any of those options either, and I can't really think of a fourth. They really primary
maybe option. Those are the three orbs, the red, white, and yellow. Yeah. Here's your options, folks. Which one are you going to pick?
Which one are you going to pick? I mean, I hope that we get more clarity as we progress over the years with this. You know, I mean, it's interesting that there's these, obviously, I mean, most people that have done any sort of due diligence on this know that the US government is not a single body. It's a fraction of different alliances and, you know, vertical pathways and stovepipe programs, and not everyone communicates with each other. But it's interesting that there definitely seems to be a contingent within, well, at least the DOD and within aspects of the Pentagon that don't want this happening, that seem to not want this conversation that's occurring right now, that we're saying could be a greenlit, sanctioned, yeah, and relatively strategic rollout of information. There seems to be groups that don't want that to happen. I mean, we've recently had the DOD set up a group name that is so long I can't even remember it and can't be bothered.
It's intentional. That's intentional.
The AOIMSG or whatever it is.
They do it as a joke. I mean, of course they do. These people do. I say these people again. I'm referring to the people in the know. You see this with, and this is why I actually reached out to you, Jay. Remember in the email, I saw your interview with John
Ramirez. Yeah,
Ramirez, and I listened to it, and I said, "Holy shit." This guy has come to the same conclusion I have.
Yeah.
And I've listened to a lot of analysis on the phenomenon. I've drawn my own conclusions, but I'm always open to new information. I'm never set in stone about anything. But he approached it similar to how you look at it as an analysis, not as a researcher per se. He's looking at the data,
yep,
and coming up with, you know, the logical conclusion, not an interpretation of soft data. You're looking, you know, you're analyzing what is known and drawing logical conclusion from that. And despite how incredible the conclusion may be, it's still the most logical conclusion. And so I was very impressed with some of his talking points, and also some other reasons. And I had asked you if I could, if you would send my information along. I guess you must have Googled me or something, because you reached back to me. I think I sent you another interview I did with Deep Prasad on UAP. And then we kind of went from there. I kind of trailed off. Where was I going with that?
I'm not sure. You're talking about John Ramirez and his theories, and
yes, he did an excellent job at describing what he knew and what he analyzed and what he witnessed or was privy to, and his analysis as someone entrenched in the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, that's interesting. Perhaps a presentation from someone in, you know, the analysis community, someone who conducts, you know, trend analysis for a living might present something interesting for people. I really wanted people to see that this wasn't a series of one-offs.
Yeah.
But this is a long history of accounts. So these things, and it's inarguable at this point. Mm-hmm. Anyone who argues against it, I've lost, you know, interest in people like Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's disappointing, because as a scientist, you should always follow the logical conclusion of analysis. And despite how unbelievable a conclusion is, that is science. Oh, well,
you know, Neil said so himself. He's reviewed the UFO literature and he's just not impressed.
I'm sorry, it's not about him being impressed or not. That's a personal perspective. Impression is personal, and that's not scientific. Yeah. Even the terminology is not scientific. Yeah. So I have issues with him, and that was disappointing. And there's like a number of others who really put their foot in the ground to the point of foolishness. I mean, their arguments are silly at this point.
Yeah. And it's primarily coming from mainstream academic science, and it's coming from people like SETI, Seth Shostak from the SETI group. You know,
he's backpedaled a little bit. Have you noticed?
Bloody well
that?
Should he should have a have an you know what? I made a conscious effort to just not really look into what Seth has to say anymore. So perhaps I should have a look at seeing how he's
backpedaled. I think Avi Loeb has done a great job of shaming them. And Avi, if you're listening, thank you. They needed that wake up call, because if you're representing the scientific community or analysis community in any way, they're not being good stewards of this profession. They are, you know, posting and presenting their personal impressions and feelings and emotions on something. And, you know, I have my own interpretations, but I don't have any impressions. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. If I'm right, I'm right. You know, it's an analysis. It's not chiseled in granite.
Well, I've said this a few times. There's a big difference between a curious skeptic and a professional debunker. You know, one of them is genuinely curious and is going to be objective, and the other has a bias and has a point to prove and is going to do everything they can to prove that point. Just like we have that on the flip side with people who film the sun and say a lens flare is a UFO. You know, there's plenty of people on the other side of the aisle who think everything is anomalous and won't accept the answer that it's, you know, a prosaic explanation. But the professional debunkers have the exact same issue on the polarity side of that argument, and they just refuse to acknowledge when something doesn't fit within their acceptable parameters. And many of these cases do not fit into their parameters. You know, I was disappointed with SETI and Seth Shostak. I think that they... And I'll have to listen to see how he's changed his opinion, because I just think that they've backed the wrong conceptual horse with, you know, fast repeating radio bursts and trying to find things.
Oh, God, that's and, listen, I can tell you right now, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is such an antiquated approach.
Right.
Look, we're on the cusp of developing quantum entangled communications. We're not far from that. And trust me, we're not far from that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's here now, but it's close. So, you know, whoever is piloting or whatever is piloting these crafts, they're not going to use radio is slow. Yeah. Radio is slower than light. And light is like a snail crawling through the universe. You're not going to use that method of communication.
No.
You're going to use quantum communication. That's just, and the fact that SETI is wasting their time with this is sad, because it's not forward thinking, which is what SETI is supposed to be.
Exactly.
If you're forward thinking, you change your perspective as things change. Yeah. This is the scientific principle. If you're conducting research and new information comes into light, you don't continue the research as it were. You have to reinvent your research parameters to include the new information. It's a pain in the ass, but you have to do it if you want a viable analysis. And SETI dropped the ball huge. Mm-hmm. And I think they got lazy. And Seth, like, I know they fear credibility. I fear credibility. You know, I don't do many talks on this topic. I don't post much on this topic. But I felt like I can finally come forward without it hurting my professional credibility at this point in time. Thankfully, I've been interested in the topic for a long time. So, I wanted to touch upon TTSA real quick. So just as a point of statement, I have never been contracted by TTSA. Early on in their development, I had sent them a kind of a tactful analysis and project idea that would help garner more interest in their business and yield higher revenue. And basically, I proposed a very insightful and well thought out project that they could take on that would cost very little. And they loved the idea, but they weren't ready for it. And well, that's what they told me. And I thought that was interesting. You know, this is going to sound arrogant as hell, and your listeners will probably think I'm an ass, but I looked at it from a perspective as this is an excellent business strategy. Like I do this for a living, and I'm like, you're doing this, but you could do this for little to no cost with an extremely high yield and increase your potential. Not just earning, but marketing potential and outreach and everything. And they said they weren't ready for it. And I'm like, okay, that's odd. And then later on, they split up. And so I was like, did they ever really want to be a viable business at all? And I'm starting to wonder. And I speak with a member of who's left on the team now, since Lou and Mellon and Hal all left. I think Hal is still listed as a reference, but I doubt he does anything with them, because from what I've heard directly from this team member, they're no longer pursuing the science aspect. They're pursuing the arts. So the actual name of the company or organization is slightly misleading. Should just be To the Arts, I guess. I'm not sure. I do like Tom's books. I find them interesting. They're not the best, but they're not terrible. And I think he does kind of strategically try to include information that he's garnered over his interviews. Whether or not that information is accurate, I have no idea. I feel like he got counterintelligenced himself. That sucks. But, you know, I think we'll all remember TTSA. We have to give credit where credit is due. They were the first people. Mm-hmm. And everybody mentions the New York Times, but it was TTSA.
It was TTSA
that first released it. Yeah. And so, you know.
No, Tom, you know, like Tom DeLonge. Yeah, I know. Tom DeLonge has propelled the, me too. He's propelled this in. I mean, you know, when he was first going on interviews, everyone was calling him crazy. I remember Joe Rogan taking the.
I thought Joe's treatment, and I love Joe really, Rogan, yeah. But I'm like, Joe, what are you doing? And he never has since apologized for the way he treated him.
I've picked up on a few things from other interviews where they were showing the Nimitz footage. I actually remember. It's a bit of a dick.
Yeah, and he made a comment.
Comment. Like, young Jamie put up the video and it had the watermark, and you hear Joe, hear him literally go, don't put that up again. Don't put that up again. And it's just like, you know, like he's upset that he threw him under the bus and then suddenly it became very legitimate. He obviously thought, wow, this guy's a clown. He didn't like, and I knew that this was a turning point in their interview when Tom DeLonge showed the TR3B footage that looked a little bit dubious.
Wonky, and,
Yeah, like Joe was pretty much kind of done at that point by the looks of it. And then, he obviously was legitimized by the New York Times and Lou Elizondo coming out and Christopher Mellon. And Joe never really took that back. So, no, I really support Tom. I think Tom obviously he's a very savvy businessman as well. But for a Blink-182 rock star to basically be the catalyst for UFO, UAP discussion in Congress and the Senate, that's a big deal. And it's a shame.
It's also not something he's experienced. And so I think like the community needs to cut him some slack. He's not a researcher or analyst. Yes, he's probably well-read and versed in the subject matter, but he doesn't traditionally come from that background. So, you know, he did what he thought he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's done a hell of a lot. I think it is a shame that TTSA didn't become what we all felt it would become. And I'm sure Tom DeLonge feels that way, because I don't think he ever thought this was going to happen to TTSA.
Well, I can tell you with some degree of certainty that Mellon and Lou knew that this would happen.
Yeah.
But
not so much Tom.
Not so much Tom. Mm. And you know, I wonder what Tom's up to now. I don't see much. Does he tweet at all or make content?
I mean, I haven't really looked at his Twitter that much. He makes the occasional tweet, but really he seems to have stepped back from being as public about all of this right now. You know, they kind of promote the merchandise, the TTSA merchandise.
Yeah.
It's a far cry from where he was, you know, a year or 2 years ago when he was full ahead and full speed on this. So I'll be curious
to see his interview in a couple of years when he reflects on the whole situation.
Yeah.
I want to know his take.
Yeah.
If he felt like he got screwed or played, or if it was completely amicable. He may not admit it either. So that's interesting. I do like what Avi Loeb and Michio Kaku. I mean, Michio Kaku has been one of my favorite scientists.
He's been ahead of the game
since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So
he was early in the doors acknowledging that this should be taken seriously.
He's great. And he's just great. He's a great thinker. He's, you know, always stayed true to the scientific, you know. It may be incredible or amazing, but study it, research it, think about it, and Avi Loeb, and there's some other really prominent players who are helping the narrative now. I don't think Avi Loeb fully believes that the object was an alien craft or anything. I think he's just utilizing it to point out to the scientific community that, look, you guys are scientists. Like, you're supposed to investigate things of interest. And I laughed. I literally laughed when I read the article about the proposed explanation of what the object was. It was so convoluted that it was less likely that it was a, you know, some sort of hydrogen propelled frozen object that, you know, didn't emit any gaseous tail. It was absurd.
Grasping at straws, basically.
It made less sense than if it was an actual craft. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think he's doing a good job to point out that the scientific community has dropped a huge ball. What I can tell you, though, not in detail, but I can tell you that there are a lot of private entities and even government agencies interested in electrogravitic field generation. And lots of money is going into this research quietly, not talked about, a few million here, a couple dozen million there. That's not much to these big players. And there's an interest. There's a keen interest. And what I think we're observing is that these insiders of these companies and bureaucratic institutions and military organizations, they have an idea. They know that it's real, and they know that other humans have the toys. And I think they're very interested in trying to develop it. And I know firsthand that money is being spent.
Yeah.
I will go on record saying that. I can't say, unfortunately, due to NDAs, who and where and why and how much, but I can say that money is being spent on this. I know it. It's interesting and fascinating.
On electrogravitics and...
Yes, electrogravitic field propulsion and just generation. It's usually not... They don't talk about propulsion. It's usually just field generation, because the propulsion is a supplement effect of the field. So.
Yeah.
But material science is seeing an insurgence with quantum computing right now. So you have these quantum computing startups that are doing some amazing things and really are able to crunch the data a supercomputer would take, you know, forever to do. And so they're, you know, putting together these ideas of new materials and synthesizing these new molecular structures that were previously unknown. And it's only a matter of time before they take that data and make it in real life. So things are changing fast and the horizon is broad.
Yes. We're going to have to wrap up soon because we're over 3 hours now, which is awesome.
Really?
Yeah, I know, man.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. There's nothing bad about having a good long conversation about these things. And this is a kind of subject where you need to have long conversations because there's just so much to discuss. But and I'm going to have to get you back on because I'd love to have a talk about just kind of futurist perspectives, the kind of quantum computing and advances in physics where it might lead us. I'd love to have that conversation, but I will ask you real quick now. Do you think that within our lifetimes and perhaps even within a relatively short period of time, there will be some rollout of this type of technology of field propulsion, maybe through the military? Do you think we're going to unveil a platform?
Depends on what you consider our lifetime. Are you considering our lifetime as the current expected lifetime, or are you considering what our lifetime will be in 50 years from now?
Yeah, okay. Well, let's say 50 years from now.
50 years from now? I think that we will be well in our way into fusion drives. In fact, we'll have very large fusion reactors and working toward making them smaller. For the first time recently, I just read the scientific paper, actually 2 days ago, and first time ever, they got more energy than they had to put into a fusion reactor.
Right.
I don't know if you read that.
No, I didn't read that.
That represents a tremendous leap forward because now the principle is there. We've proven the point, and now it's working on efficiency. Efficiency is increased through material science and further tweaking the components, which is inevitable given any rate of increase over time. So we'll see, you know, nuclear fusion reactors will be getting smaller in about 50 years. We'll already have it. AGI will be in place. That'll be running large sectors of the economy market. The global markets will be run on an AGI, artificial general intelligence. I think a lot of the bureaucratic processes will be run by an AGI. So we'll have increased efficiencies, better materials to further those efficiencies. Fusion energy, it sounds incredible, but it's, you know, this is the trajectory. Anyone who wants to argue this, I feel free. I will publicly argue it with you. These things are inevitable. They're coming down the line. Warp and electrogravitic field propulsion, in my opinion, has been around for decades, not publicly, but I believe we're on the cusp. DARPA just released the new scientific literature on the discovery of a warp field bubble, which is nonsense because we've known about that. Even civil scientists have known about that for a while. So,
well, wasn't it that they I believe the claim is they actually made one, like a tiny, tiny bubble in space and time.
Yeah. Honestly, I wasn't as impressed as I should have been. I know that sounds bizarre. It's just that I feel like that's been around for a while, and DARPA is just kind of squishing it out of their butt cheeks into a shell company.
No. When it said that they had accidentally created one, I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
You know, and if you further look into who accidentally created it, the physicist or engineer or the head, Dr. White?
Yeah, Sonny White or something like that.
Dr. White, one of his partnered companies has been working on material that is proposed to be utilized in UAP. So you have this material that interacts with X-rays at certain frequencies and generates a field. It's in their research. I went into Icarus or Isaris, or I can't remember. And you look in their research publications, and they've been working on material science for a long time that correlates a lot with UAP research. So I find it very odd that this company would be partnered with Dr. White and his team to accidentally create a warp field.
Well, Eric Davis recently came out saying this guy's full of shit. He recently, I saw it on Twitter, someone had capped a message because he's in a private Facebook group, and he was mouthing off about Dr. White, saying, "I know who Dr. White is. He's questionable, blah, blah, blah. There's no way that they'd have been able to do this." So according to Dr. Eric Davis, he believes...
Well, he's a legitimate researcher.
Yeah.
If you're DARPA, or, you know, this goes below DARPA, this is subterranean level here. If you're getting a technology out, you're going to find somebody who's not as credible, who's not going to question this gift that you're giving them for their research and career and professional status. You're going to take that nugget, expand upon it, research it a bit, and then proclaim it's yours because you were told to do that because you're a part of DARPA. You do what you're told. So, you know, Eric Davis is probably a little butthurt that he wasn't gifted that because he's been known to talk and not play by the rules. So you don't play by the rules, you don't get the nuggets. And I think that's where Hal Puthoff and Eric Davis exist, in that line in between, where they're certainly capable and they know that stuff exists, but they aren't allowed into the game.
Yeah, they're chasing the golden ticket. They've been trying to get there for a while. I agree with that. I think that's probably the correct way to look at it with Eric Davis and Hal Puthoff, because they like you said, they obviously know their stuff, but have spoken out and probably aren't trusted to
they're not trusted. They've aligned themselves to people who aren't controllable.
Yeah. I want to keep going, but we need to wrap up. I've got one last thing, because you were talking about obviously if they do have this warp drive or warp bubble technology, and it's already there, it's already present, it's already operable. I guess that's what I was asking about. Do you think that they'll roll out some form of platform? Because when you're talking about a 50-year projection of technological readiness and where we're going to be at that point, it feels like you were talking about we're just going to be building from scratch from where we are right now. So do you feel like they're never going to let this stuff out? They're just going to let us develop it ourselves? No,
they won't ever do it as a platform of their making. What they'll do is they'll do exactly... this is a great example of the warp bubble research. That's exactly what they'll just do.
Drip it out. Drip.
It's what Colonel Corso did strategically to develop those key technologies that he stated back in the 70s, 80s, 60s. I can't remember, but that's what you do. This isn't new. This is what this is what intelligence does. Yeah. You control the dissemination of information. If you have information, but you don't want people to know it comes from you, and you need it to come from a source who would have such information, you find the right company. You find the right team, the right professional, and you say, you're taking this, or you gift them that, or they somehow accidentally discover it. And you do that over the course of a few decades, and all of a sudden it looks like, oh, cool, privatization, look what it developed.
Yeah, yeah.
But in fact, it's been militarized forever, and they're just bubbling it out because they don't want ties with it. They don't want the public knowing that's how taxes are spent.
Yeah, you see, if that's the case, it kind of enrages me, man. You just think about, you know, they're just sitting there on this treasure trove of world-changing technologies.
Yes, they are.
And and they're just going, here's a little breadcrumb, here's a tiny little bit, you know, just ease it out
over
time.
What can they do?
Well, what can they do? I know. I mean, obviously.
Disrupt a whole global system?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
what
would happen. I mean, I'm with you. I want it now. I want it now. I want validation, but at the cause of complete and utter disruption? I don't think so.
It's never going to happen. Yeah.
It's never. No, it will. It will. Yeah. We're moving toward that direction. Mm. I mean, at some point, especially with the advancements in AI, they're not going to be able to slow or stop this trajectory. So this trajectory, this momentum is already started. This schedule, if you will, a very informal schedule. I don't think it's done by dates. I think it's done by phases.
Right. Yeah.
so we're moving forward to what? I have no idea. What do we do as a civilization with warp field technology? Is there a mass exodus of Earth that people just say, fuck it, and I'm leaving? Who knows? Like, what would happen?
We're not. See, this is the catch 22 for me, because I feel like we absolutely need a paradigm shift to get out of this kind of slum that we're in with propulsion at the moment and how it's ruining the planet, fossil fuels. We need to get out of that, but at the same time, we're so immature.
You'll have to give up freedoms.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, like, how do you manage a disruptive technology like electrogravitics, warp drive, and all of this? You know, how do you manage that?
You slowly whittle down freedoms at scales that seem incoherent and connected and, you know, minuscule. But over time, every second ticks, every sand grain falls. And over time, that control becomes tighter and tighter, at which point you can safely release information of any scale or magnitude without fear of catastrophic issues.
God, none of this sounds very fun.
No, and I think people who have come to the same sort of analysis I have, it's quite disparaging.
Yeah.
It's disheartening, but what can you do? This is our reality. You do the best you can, you live your life, you be the best version of yourself, and, you know, enjoy what you're experiencing, because this is our experience. And, you know, there is tremendous corruption. There's tremendous evil. There's lots of lies and deceit. But that's just the reality. We can't change that. And no matter how much protesting you did, it would only collapse the entire everything. And then we'd be just nomadic and chaotic and anarchic. And that's not good either. This is the ultimate trend of humanity, and people don't realize that. So I do this, you know, I spend a great deal of time watching the trends of human passage throughout history and time. And there's never been a civilization that still exists.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you save that from occurring? Well, with ultimate control, with tools of control, but controlling in a manner that you wish to create harmony. And it sounds dystopian as hell, because it is, but what do you do? Because the advancement of technology precipitates danger, flat out. So if technology is going to increase, which it will, given any degree of time, it will increase. There's no way to put the genie in the bottle. So how do we save humanity from destroying the planet or themselves, because technology, as it increases, becomes exponentially more effective at changing or disrupting scales, patterns of scales. So as we increase, it becomes each person individually has the power to change and alter the world at larger and larger scales, to the point where it's very dangerous. So we're moving toward a future of control, and I don't like it, but there's really no other, there's no other option that I can see, as long as we're progressing.
Unless the phenomenon just decides we're just going to reveal ourselves to all of you at once, because, you know, in one way,
that's possible.
The cards really are stacked in their favor. They, whatever this thing is, it could reveal itself en masse to everyone and make it completely undeniable and disrupt the entire world. So, I mean, there's always that potential that maybe there's some looming event coming towards us that we're currently ignorant of. But
maybe that's what happened to previous civilizations.
Yeah.
Maybe they, advanced too far, or the aliens, we'll call them aliens. I don't know what else to call them. Phenomena, were too casual in their showing of themselves and disrupted civilization. Maybe that happened several times. Maybe it didn't at all. I don't know. I enjoy the topic, and I really love talking to you. I know you need to go, and we will talk again next time. We can talk about where trends are going and my analysis on AI and quantum computing.
I would really like to talk about that with you. So I will get you back on after Christmas, I think, because that's an area that I'm interested in. I'm no way near close to being an expert or a professional in that field, but it's just the passive observations of where we're going, technological trends in AI, quantum computing. Like, we're definitely going down that route. So would love to do that. This has been awesome, Mikai. I mean, you did a fantastic presentation. We've had a really
good
chat afterwards.
I hope I didn't put anyone to sleep.
No, I don't think you would have, mate. I mean, there's always going to be one or two people that go, but that's just the way it is, you know.
You need noise, otherwise it doesn't look credible.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't worry about that. I think people really appreciate what you've done for us today with this presentation, and it's just been a good chat as well. So I'd love to get you back on, but until then, just would like to say thank you very much, because it's been very enlightening and it's been very interesting.
I love what you're doing, Jay, and keep on keeping on. I think you have solidified a spot in the community that will only continue to strengthen, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for having me on. I look forward to talking again.
Very kind of you, and we will definitely do that very soon.